I want your attention for about 5 minutes on purpose as I tell you the story surrounding these statements, or this statement made twice. David had committed an awful sin. He had become imperialistic. He had wanted to take over a country that was not his, and a country that he had no right to conquer. And so he numbered the people. No doubt you've heard said many times, read many times in the Bible where it says that David numbered the people, or Moses numbered the people. I've even had letters from people who said, "Dr. Howes, I don't believe you ought to count your crowds on Sunday, because the Bible says God punished Moses and David and others for numbering the people." No, that isn't what they did. It wasn't counting the crowds that caused God's wrath to fall upon them. When it says that David numbered the people, it meant that David prepared the people for battle. He divided the people into companies, platoons, squads, prepared for battle, got ready to fight a war. And God does not want his people ever to be the aggressor in a war. So God punished his people when his leaders or servants, when they numbered their people and prepared for an unnecessary battle. David numbered his people. Therefore, God came to David and said, "David, I'm going to punish the people. Now you have one choice of three punishments. Either I'll send a 7-year famine upon the people." That's the first choice. Or, number two, I'll send you 3 months of defeat. I mean, you'll lose and be defeated at the hand of the enemy for 3 months. Or, number three, I'll send you 3 days of pestilence. The word pestilence is just another word for disease, awful disease, cancer, or something of that nature. So God said, "David, you sinned in numbering the people. Now, you have one choice of three. Either 7 years of famine, 3 years of losing the battles, or 3 months of losing the battles, or 3 days of pestilence." I'm sure that David chose what you or I would have chosen. David thought about 7 years of famine and said, "No, that's not my choice." David thought about 3 months of losing the battle with all the hundreds and thousands that would be killed and slain at the hands of the enemy. And David said, "No, that's not my choice either." David said, "Dear God, I'll take the 3 days of pestilence." God did send 3 days of pestilence. And in 3 days, 70,000 of David's people died. David is grief-stricken, realizing that 70,000 of his people have died because of his only his sin. David flees to Mount Moriah, to a threshing floor of Araunah. And there David builds an altar. And he makes the statements that we read a while ago. He says, "I said in my haste, I am cut off from before thine eyes." Then he said, "I said in my haste, all men are liars." Now, if you followed these verses carefully, you'd find that after he said these things, he was sorry that he said them. In fact, he's recounting. He said, "I talked too soon. I said something I shouldn't have said. I talked when I should have been listening. I responded too quickly." He said, "Twice I said in my haste." Now, the first thing he said was an accusation against God. He said, "God, you turned your back on me. You've cut me off from your eyes. You're not looking at me." Now, nothing could be further from the truth. Did you know God oftentimes appears to be cut off from us when he's actually looking at us? Did you know God sometimes appears to have his back turned when his back isn't turned at all? I'm sure that everybody in this room can recall your childhood, something along this line having happened. My mother and I used to go downtown in Dallas, where I grew up. That was the biggest thing. We didn't have shopping centers in those days. We had downtown districts and little neighborhood stores. That's all we had. We'd get on the streetcar or bus, and ride downtown. And I can still recall when I was a little boy, about that high, I'd want to wander away from my mommy. I'd smell the popcorn. There's nothing smells better than popcorn cooking. Nothing in the world. If I ever fall from my usual diet, it'll be for popcorn or Hershey bars, one or the other. And I'd smell the popcorn, and I'd run over to the popcorn, and Mother would say, son, where are you? And she'd come to get me. But she'd say, "Now, son, you stay close to me." What she used to say is, "You hang on to my skirt." That's back in the days when folks had enough skirts to hang on to. And you hang on to my skirt. And so I'd hang on to Mama's skirt. Then I'd smell the candy. Oh, the smell of candy at a five and dime store. There's nothing like it this side of the altar of incense. And the smell of candy. And so I'd wander off over, look at the candy, and drool. Slobber is another word for it. As I'd look at the candy, and I hear a voice, "Jack, Jack, Jack, son, where are you?" And my mother'd come finding me again. And she'd say, "Son, you hold on to my skirt." And I'd hold on to her skirt until I'd see a baseball glove I just thought I had to have. Or I'd see maybe a toy. And I'd go look at the toys and wish I could have a toy. And then my mother would do something. She would pretend that she was away from me. And she'd hide behind something where she could see me, but I couldn't see her. She was trying to teach me a lesson. I'd say, "Mommy, Mommy." "No, Mommy." "Mommy, Mommy." 1,000 people would say, "What?" Because it's full of mommies. The store is full of mommies, you know. And finally, in a frantic search, I'd begin to cry, "I want my mommy. I want." Those are words been said by every person that's ever lived that's had a mommy. "I want my mommy. I want my mommy." And then my mother would come from behind the crowd. She'd never looked as pretty in her all of her life as she did. I said, "Mommy, I was scared." And mother would say, "Son, now that would be a lesson to you. I was watching you all the time, son. But I had to scare you to let you hold on to my skirt." I held on to both sides of her skirt from then on. That's what God does sometimes. Sometimes you look to God and say, "God, you're not paying attention to me." The Lord says, "Yeah, you wandered from me. You wouldn't pay attention to me. So I decided to turn my back." No, God's back isn't turned. It's like we used to play hide and go seek. Come find me. Come find me. And the dear Lord sometimes appears that his back is turned. He appears that he's not looking. Why? So you'll say, "I want my Father. I want my God. I want my Lord. Lord, Lord, where are you? I want to come back." And the Lord, you find out later on, the Lord, his eyes were always on you all the time. So David said, "I said in my haste, I am cut off from before thine eyes." But David said also something else. He said, "All men are liars." "I talked too soon," David said. First, I accused God, and I talked too soon. Second, I accused men. I talked too soon. "All men are liars." And David got thinking about it, and he said, "I talked too soon. I said that in my haste." Now, there are two things I want to say about these statements, and they're not real profound, but I think they'll be helpful if you listen. The first one is this: he talked too soon. He talked too soon. Did you know that most of us need to learn the lesson of not answering quite as quickly as we do now? Maybe if we'd just wait a while and not say anything for just a while, we have to say with David of old, "I said in my haste. I said in my haste." Anybody know what that noise is? Is it? Okay, as long as it's not coming from below. as long as it's coming from up that way instead of down this way. It's angels instead of demons. And I thought somebody had a tape recorder on. But anyway, David said, "I talked too soon. I said in my haste." Have you said anything lately you shouldn't have said? Have you talked too soon? Did you fight back when you shouldn't have fought back? Did you quit back and get your word in? "I'll get him. I'll say what I want to say. I'll tell him all." Did you lately? Sort of an empty kind of reward, isn't it? You don't feel as good as you thought you'd feel after you said that, do you? Have you said anything in your haste? I was reading the other day an interesting statement. When Samuel named Saul to become the king, he said to Saul's servant, "You pass on over." But he said in 1 Samuel chapter 9 and verse 2, he said to Saul, he's going to anoint Saul as king of Israel. And Saul is going to become the king of God's people. And Samuel says, "Saul, let your servant pass over, but stand thou still a while. Stand thou still a while." Why? He's going to become king. Why? He's going to lead God's people. Why? He has a great task before him. Why? He has a job to do that he can't do by himself. And I do not care who you are, you will not be the kind of Christian God wants you to be unless you learn to stand still a while. Stand still a while. This is a busy church with all of the hubbub and activities. We're coming and going, and the college students have a little poem. "Mary had a little lamb. It should have been a sheep. It went to Hiles Anderson and died for lack of sleep." And we're coming and going all the time, and Sunday school and Wednesday night and the grade school and the high school and the college and the bus ministry and the youth program and something going on all the time. We've got to remember one thing, and we must remember it well. We've got to take time to stand still a while. Did you talk too soon? Have you said something to somebody when you should have waited? I was reading Eliphaz saw God in a great vision in Job, I think, chapter 4. And Eliphaz made a statement that I think is one of the most startling statements in all the Bible. Here's what he said. There was silence, and I heard a voice. There was silence, and I heard a voice. Did you know you'll hear more voices in silence than you will when you talk? Every Christian needs to get alone with his God and just be quiet for a while. There was silence, and I heard a voice. Oh, I know what folks say. They say, well, you've heard them say it. The psychologists say it. God bless them. Most psychologists I know, and psychiatrists I know, are so in such desperate need to go to a psychiatrist. But you've heard them say, you know, it's always better to let it out than it is to hold it in. Now, some fool thought that up. Some fool thought that up. It'll do you more good if you get it off your chest and just go ahead and blow your stack. Yeah, it'll do you more good, but it won't do the world more good. And it won't do you more good either. The Bible likens the tongue to a poisonous snake. The Bible likens the tongue to an asp. The Bible likens the tongue to a wild beast. Now, don't you tell me for a single minute tonight, Brother Vineyard, that if I had a rattlesnake here in a box, and I'd hold that rattlesnake up in a box, and the rattlesnake in the box, I'd say, inside this box, ladies and gentlemen, there is a venomous, poisonous rattlesnake. Don't tell me for a minute that you'd jump up and say, let it out. It'll do us more good if we just let it out. Well, if and when we do let it out, this door and mine back here, I'll tell you for sure. No, it doesn't do more good to let a rattlesnake out of a box. It doesn't do more good if you let your hot temper out either. Well, I know this little trite statement. Well, it's better to let it out than to hold it in. That's a lie. It's not. David said, I said in mine haste. David said, I shouldn't have said it. By the way, if you don't say it, after a while, you won't have as much to hold in. Don't say for a minute that if we had I had a bottle of poison tonight, and this bottle was tightly sealed on top, and all of a sudden, Brother Fist walks up and says, let it out. You'll feel a whole lot better if you let it out. That's not true at all. Poison's better sealed and closed than a venomous serpent is better in a box or caged. And a tiger or a lion is better in a cage. And the Bible says the devil walketh around like a roaring lion, seeking whom he may devour. It is not best to say it. It's best to hold it and not have to say with David in days to come, I said in mine haste. If you don't start talking about it, there's several things. First place, a lot of folks won't know it. In the second place, if nobody ever talks about it, it'll never be talked about over the city or the country. The Jews. God punished the Jews because they complained as a nation. You know where that complaining started? That complaining started when the Jews complained in their own tent. Fellow would come home and say to his wife, boy, Moses sure blew it today. Well, you say you can say the things you feel to those you love best. That's a lie, too. That's a lie, too. So in their tents, maybe some woman would say to her husband, I'll tell you, I didn't like the way what Moses said today. I just didn't like it. Before long, it was being talked about in the tent. And then from tent to tent. And after a while, throughout the entire country. And that's why God sent venomous, fiery serpents to destroy the people when thousands and thousands were killed. Why? Because they said in their haste something they should not have said. Sorrow's daily paper has long columns. It features many articles. It is published hourly. And you can get a new edition at almost every house. But it's a pretty sorry way to spread news. I said in my haste, oh, these tempers, oh, these tempers. Well, you say, you know, everybody has a temper. Everybody doesn't have to lose it, though. Well, nobody's perfect. No, you don't have to. Nobody's perfect, but you don't have to enjoy being imperfect. And it's nothing to laugh about when you say, well, you know, I spread some gossip and I cursed a bit, but nobody's perfect. Ha, 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 ha. You ought to say, I'm not perfect. Boo, hoo, hoo, hoo. Nobody ought to be happy about imperfection. Dr. John Rice says so often, I hear him say it so often, somebody asks him, said, do you believe in sinless perfection? He says, no, says, I believe in it, but I don't practice it. Somebody asked old Henry Morrison, the editor of a holiness newspaper. He was a holiness preacher and a missionary. Asked Henry Morrison one time, said, they laughed at him and joked because of his holiness, and said, hey, have you gotten to where you can't sin yet? He said, no, I haven't gotten to where I can't sin yet, but I've gotten to where I can't enjoy it anymore. Ought not to enjoy sin. Well, you say everybody's going to have to talk a little bit. No, you don't. David said, I said, my, did you hear about the fellow? An old man. He went to the doctor for a checkup. He was way up in years. The doctor examined him, and the doctor said, you are in robust health. He said, in fact, I don't know a man your age is in good health as you're in. How do you do it? Please take the babies out. Please. How do you do it? And the fellow said, the old man said, it's because I've lived an outdoor life. And the doctor said, outdoor life? Yes, he said, all my life, these many years, I've lived an outdoor life, especially since I got married. And the doctor said, well, why do you live an outdoor life? He said, when we got married, my wife and I made a promise that if I lost my temper, she wouldn't say one word. And if she lost her temper, I'd go outside. And he said, I've been outside ever since I've been married. Sort of sad, isn't it? Sort of pitiful. Jonathan Edwards, it was, who had a daughter who was a hellcat. Jonathan Edwards, one of the greatest preachers that ever lived, had a daughter who had one of the longest tongues that you can imagine. A young man fell in love with his daughter and came and asked Jonathan Edwards for his daughter's hand in marriage, and he said, no, you can't have her. Oh, but I love her. Still can't have her. But she loves me. Still can't have her. But we love each other. Still can't have her. We feel it's God's will. Still can't have her. Why can't I have her? He said, I'll tell you why you can't have her. The grace of God can live with some people that no one else can ever live with. I wonder tonight, what have you said hastily? Huh? What have you said at home quickly? Like an arrow, like a dagger, like a spear, like a sword, like a knife. What have you said in the dormitories lately? Have you said in your haste? Would you have to say tonight, I said in my haste, oh, something I wish I hadn't have said. If you'd have waited a few seconds, you probably wouldn't have said it. What did you say at school in your haste? What did you say on the job in your haste? Was it some word of gossip? Was it some bit of slander? Was it some curse word? Was it some dirty joke? Was it some foul-mouthed language? What was it that you said before you thought? David said, oh God, forgive me. I said in my haste something I shouldn't have said. Aaron Burr, who was one of the great leaders of our nation in early years, died a lonesome, wicked, lost man. Aaron Burr attended Princeton University back in the days when they believed and preached the gospel. They had revival services, revival campaign on campus one time. And Aaron Burr was under conviction. Oh, he wanted to be saved, and he felt conviction, but he wouldn't do it. And finally, one night, in a fit of temper, somebody witnessed to him. And he said, no! And he cursed and ran out the back door of Princeton Auditorium and got outside and looked up. And before he knew it, he said, God, you leave me alone, and I'll leave you alone. He said the rest of his life he wished he'd never said that, because God did leave him alone. And Aaron Burr had to say the rest of his life, I said in my haste. I said in my haste. I said in my haste. What is that statement you're thinking of right now? What is it, teacher? What is it, deacon? What is it, choir member? What is it, staff member? What is it, college student? What is it, housewife? What is it, teenager? What is that statement you've made recently? I mean, suddenly, quickly, by reflex, you said it. Now it came like an arrow that'll never come back to its quiver again. What is it? What are you thinking about right now? Come to God and say with David, oh, God, forgive me. I said in my haste. I said in my haste. And then fall on your face and say, oh, God, control this tongue of mine. Second thing about David, he talked too soon, but something else he did. He said too much. He said too much. He talked too soon, but he said too much. David said, I am cut off from before thine eyes. He accused God. And then David said, all men are liars. Let me say this, folks. Every week of my life, people come to my office, and here's what they say. At least a half a dozen say it every week. I just don't trust anybody anymore. I just don't trust anybody anymore. Don't say that. And don't feel that way. Sure, folks will disappoint you, and you'll disappoint people. We've got to trust each other. We've got to love each other. We've got to stay with each other. I mean, this is all we have. Sure, we're human. Nobody's perfect, and we ought not to enjoy it, but the fact is we are. And we've got to get the place to where we can let people say things that disappoint us, and we erase them and forget them and realize that we're just simply frail creatures of dust. And good night, we're here on this earth, and we've got problems and burdens, and every time we have a pain in the chest, we wonder if it's a heart attack, and every time we have a sore that festers up, we wonder if it's cancer, and every time one of the children gets sick, we wonder if it's going to be this terrible, incurable disease, and we're worried about famine, we're worried about our children starving, we're worried about our jobs, we're worried about depression, we're worried about inflation, we're concerned about Watergate, we're concerned about our nation going to the devil, we're concerned about being attacked on the streets. We're concerned about our daughters and our wives being raped. We're concerned about our money being stolen. We're concerned about our Congress. We're concerned about our young people. We're concerned about our schools. We're concerned about our nation. We're concerned about our president. We're concerned about our Supreme Court. We're worried about our food. We're worried about our cars. We're worried about gasoline. Good night. We're all having too tough a time not to love each other and get along with each other. David said, I said in my haste. He talked too soon, but he also said too much. Back to Aaron Burr again. When Aaron Burr lay dying in a boarding house in Port Richmond on Staten Island, a friend came to Aaron Burr as the old man was about to die, breathing his last few breaths. And a friend came and put his ear up to Aaron Burr, or his mouth to Aaron Burr's ear, and said, Mr. Burr, they say. And the last words that Aaron Burr said were, my dear, never use those words. My dear, never use those words. They have broken more hearts than any other words ever spoken. Mr. Burr, they say. My dear, never use those words. When somebody comes to you and says, they say, never use those words. When you're prone to say, they say, do not use those words. They've broken more hearts than any two words in the English language. That one little sentence, they say, caused tears to run like rivers and caused shoulders to droop and faces to wrinkle and brows to furrow and hearts to break and people to die prematurely and homes to break and children to go astray and people to fall into sin. Those words, they say. Though Aaron Burr was not a saved man, he had more sense than most of us do. He wouldn't even listen while he was dying to the two words, they say. John Bunyan, the great author of Pilgrim's Progress and the great Baptist preacher, who was in jail for preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ and for baptizing by immersion. At one time was only a tinker. What's a tinker? A tinker, it was one who spent his life mending pots and pans. And one day John Bunyan the tinker, while mending pots and pans, came across four poor old ladies as they were talking. And one of the old ladies said something like this. They say, John Bunyan, yet an unconverted man, at least not given completely to God, began to listen. What did they say? And these four old, poor ladies were talking, and she said, they say, Jesus is wonderful. Salvation is great. Being born again is a great thing. And John Bunyan overheard these four poor old ladies talking. They didn't talk about the lady down the street. They didn't talk about the latest scandal in town. They didn't talk about somebody who'd messed up and done wrong. They talked about Jesus. They talked about salvation. They talked about the new birth. They talked about the Bible. And while John Bunyan was listening to those four poor old ladies talk, he fell to his face and his life was completely transformed. Why? Because four old poor old ladies said they say something good about Jesus. Let's talk about Jesus. The King of Kings is He. The Lord of Lords supreme through all eternity. The great I Am, the way, the truth, the life, the door. Let's talk about Jesus more and more. Great minds talk about ideas. Good minds talk about things, and weak minds talk about people. Say, what is it that you've said lately in your haste? Young folks are talking up here. Hey, up here, young folks. What is it you've said in your haste lately? What is it you said up here? Quickly you said it, like an arrow. You wanted to reach out and grab it, but it's gone too soon. It'll never come back to the quiver. What did you say? How about back in the back? What are you thinking about? What sentence is coming to your mind right now? What experience are you remembering right now? What face do you see right now? What have you said? Something you shouldn't have said. How about you folks? How about you? How about the choir? How about on the platform? How about this preacher? What have I said? What has there been that I've said so quickly I shouldn't have said it? When I said it, then what is it that I said I never should have said at all? What is it? I said in my haste. I heard somewhere about a lady walked up and said to a preacher, said, I have been noticing something about you that's too long for months. And I brought my scissors. If you'll hold your sleeve out, it's too long. It covers your hand while you preach. If you'll hold your sleeve out, I'll cut it off for you and make it shorter. He said, well, if you see anything about me that's too long, I want you to cut it off. So he held out his, he took his coat off and gave it to her. She cut his sleeves and had needle and thread and sewed it back up. He said, thank you. Now he said, I've noticed something about you that's too long too. Well, she said, you let me cut your sleeves off and they're too long. Here are the scissors. What is it do I have on that's too long? He said, stick out your tongue. Stick out your tongue. David, watching his men die, David watching his own loved ones fall over with terrible disease and pestilence, David is grief-stricken, his heart is breaking on the inside. And David said, I said in my haste. You've shut your eyes off from me. I said in my haste, all men are liars. Hasty talk has split more churches than liquor, tobacco, immorality, incest, sex perversion, all put together. Hasty talk has caused more churches to lose their power, more churches to split down the middle than all the rest of the sins put together. They say, I said in my haste. But David came to the place to where he confessed his sin. In fact, both of these Psalms, Psalm 31 and Psalm 116, are Psalms when David is remembering what he had said. I think back over my life. I'm thinking of words that I've said. I think of a sentence I made in Jacksonville, Florida, I'd like to bring back. I think of a sentence I said in my office in Garland, Texas, I'd like to bring back. I think of some words I said in a deacon's meeting one time in Garland, Texas, I'd like to bring back. I think of some words I said one night in a sermon in the early days of my ministry at First Baptist Church, I think of some words I'd like to take back. I was telling somebody the other day about Brother Bill Pinnell, pastor's up in Rochester, Michigan. A fellow got saved in his church. Wicked man. He wanted to testify in front of the whole church. Stood up in front of a crowd of 1,500 people. He said, thank God I'm saved. He said, I feel so damn much better than I did before I got saved. You like that kind of talk. Now, I don't think he should have said it. But I think the Lord sort of chuckled when he did. And the pastor was embarrassed and tried to say, thank you for that testimony, you know. And he said, I'm not through yet. He said, I've got the best GD feeding I ever had in my life. And used God's name in vain. And Brother Pinnell said, man, anybody else want to testify? He said, I'm not through yet. He said, you are the best D-A-M-N preacher I ever heard in my life. Oh, how awful. And I agree. It's about 1/100th as bad as that retort you gave in anger last week. It's about 1/1000th as bad as what 100 people have said on the telephone last week. People who sit in this room tonight. It's bad. One of the dearest preachers in America. One of the dearest preachers in America, an evangelist. Been preaching as an evangelist for over, I'm sure, nearly a half a century. Has gone day and night. And suddenly in the pulpit, he cracked up. You fellows know who he is. Cracked up right in the pulpit. And he who hadn't cursed for a half a century began to curse. Used awful, foul language. And the pastor stood up and looked at him and said, what in the blank do you want? He pushed him back down. They had to carry the fellow out in a straitjacket and take him for some treatments. Cursing in the pulpit? You mean a preacher? I guess all of us have. You know, he started talking about you blankety blank deacons. I get, but I guess we all have some pin-up things, you know. And you say, cursing in the pulpit. Yes, right in the pulpit. That's bad. I mean it. That's bad. Almost as bad as what you said to your best friend. Now, don't you tell anybody, but I got more respect for the fellow that cussed in church. Most of you heard me tell about that East Texas preacher preaching on the cross one Sunday morning. He got up and he was preaching on the cross, and he said the devil got Jesus on the cross, and the devil put the crown of thorns on him, and the devil stripped him naked, and the devil slapped him on the face, and the devil drove nails in his hands and feet, and the devil took a spear, thrust it in his side, and the devil caused a mob to hit him with their back with their hands and to slap him and spit on his face. He said, the devil did it. You know what I think of the devil? He's a dirty blankety blank of a son of a blankety blank. He cursed the devil for about 5 minutes. The people sat in stunned disbelief and silence. And finally, the poor preacher folded his Bible, realizing what he had said. He had been saved but a few months. Just a country preacher, had 6 kids, and was as mean as the devil before he got saved. Walked out the center aisle, got in his car, and drove off. And the people sat there for 5 minutes in stunned disbelief. Deacon chairman sitting over here on the front stood up after about 5 minutes and said, folks, I heard what you heard. I've been sitting here thinking what I felt about how I feel about my pastor cussing like that in the pulpit. He said, you know, I've come to one conclusion. He expressed exactly my sentiments about the devil. It's exactly the way I feel about him. Now, he said, I'm not sure he should have used those words in the pulpit, but thank God for a preacher who hates the devil. Now, he said, why don't we realize that our pastor hadn't been saved very long, and he was a very wicked man before he got saved, and why don't we just take him back and give him a raise and pay? Would you deacons do that to me tonight if I were to? Huh? Brother Fisk, come and tell me some words, would you please? I don't know any. Huh? That's bad, isn't it? For a preacher to cuss while he's preaching? That's bad, isn't it? For a preacher to use dirty words while he's preaching? That's bad. Yeah, it's bad. Almost as bad. Almost half as bad. Almost 1/100th as bad as long-tongued gossips and critics who say in their haste things that never should be said. What you say, Brother Howells, it's true. Well, since when are you supposed to be the daily newspaper? I've said before and I say it again. The dog that lives at our house can't speak, can sing, but can't speak. Your Cocker Spaniel can't either. And neither can your kitty cat. Why? Because God wanted man to speak. Why did God want man to speak? Man, God wanted man, his top creation, to praise him. And he gave us tongues. Why? With which to tell dirty stories, not on your life. with which to curse his name now in your life. You vulgar mouth, cesspools and septic tanks of filth. God didn't give you a tongue to curse his name. God didn't give you a tongue to tell filthy, dirty stories. God gave you a tongue so you could lift it toward heaven and say, praise him, Jesus, our blessed Redeemer. All hail the power of Jesus' name that angels prostrate for. God didn't give you a tongue to sing rock music. God didn't give you a tongue to be a Beatle. God didn't give you a tongue to sing heathen, pagan, sensual songs. God gave you a tongue to sing, there is a fountain filled with blood drawn from Emmanuel's veins, and sinners plunge beneath that flood, lose all their guilty stains. God didn't give you a tongue to use to express evil, wicked, dirty thoughts. God gave you a tongue with which to praise him. I said in my haste, you've turned your back on me. I said in my haste, all men are liars. I don't trust anybody. And David came to a place in his life where he saw 70,000 of his own people dying with terrible disease. David saw those whom he had loved and whom he had led and with whom he had served standing beside little graves saying goodbye to babies and boys and girls. David saw the cemeteries filling up with tombstones. David saw the people sick and suffering and dying. David went to an altar, looked up at God and said, oh God, I'm sorry. I said in my haste, you turned your back on me. I know you didn't. I know you never do. I said it in my haste. I said in my haste, all men are liars. I didn't mean that, God. I didn't mean it. I just lost my temper. I just got discouraged for a while. I said it in my haste. I'll close with this. It's been a tough week on me. I've had my heart broken, I guess, this week about some things I cannot tell. I received a visit one day this week from a preacher brother who told me something that these lips shall not repeat, that literally tore my heart out in shock and disbelief. I hold in this mind and this heart tonight, I hold things I know are true about people that could destroy people. I hold secrets in my mind tonight about people, things that folks have done who sat in this room that if I told would destroy you, you'd lose your job, you'd lose everything that's right. I know things tonight I wish I didn't know. My ears heard last week from preachers across this nation some things I didn't want to know. Some things about some people whom I love and whom I've known and with whom I've served. I could go to preachers and say, did you hear? I don't want them to hear. I don't want them to hear. I could go tonight to one of my dearest friends and say, did you know? I don't know about you, but there's something inside me that doesn't want folks to know. There's something inside me that doesn't want... You know why? I've seen too many people make a mistake but bounce up and overcome it, whose lives would have been ruined if I had told what I had heard or what they had told me. Don't spread it. Don't spread it. I'll go to my grave with things these ears have heard that this tongue will not speak. I'd 10,000 times rather go to bed at night and say, Lord, I kept it a secret. I didn't spread it. Than to go to bed and say, I got to tell it. That's no way to live. That's heathen living. Keep it in your heart. Meditate on it. Pray for him. Help him. Get him out of his trouble. But don't be a extra newspaper spreading abroad wicked, foul news. You know what some of you are? Some of us are. We're just as guilty as these scandal magazines. Same thing exactly. Go to some news stand sometime and look at the magazines that says, did you know that Liz Taylor was secretly in love with George Washington? Did you know that Marilyn Monroe and little Georgia Havens had a crush on each other? Did you hear about Jacqueline Kennedy and her romance with Max Palmer? Did you really hear about the perverted sex life of Grandma Moses? And you look at those filthy things and say, oh, my, how awful. Yes, 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 it is awful. Just as bad as it is when you take the same kind of garbage and spread it with your mouth. And if you could, and you could afford it, and make money off of it, you'd put it in print just like those other people do. I said in my haste, what was it? What was it? I faced this week one of the hardest things I've faced in my life. Of something that I'll go to my grave knowing that I wish I'd never heard. I stand before God. You wait and see. A lot of people who've been reclaimed, who stumbled into sin and left God and said or done or been to places of things they should never have said, done, or been to, they're going to come to me when I face God and they're going to say, thank you, Brother Jack. You didn't tell it. You didn't tell it. And God gave me another chance. I said in my haste. David, what did it cause? What do you mean, what did it cause? Look at those babies. Dead. Look at them. Bodies lined up, one right after the other, all because of something I said in my haste. Look at that little huddle of mothers over there with empty arms and empty breasts, walking away from little graves about that long where they buried their babies, all because of something I said in my haste. Look at those hard-working men who've been toiling and working and sweating to rear their children. And now they're gone, they're dead, and boys and girls are left orphans all this all because of something I said in my haste. God forgive me, says David. I will, says God. And that God that forgave David that night when he said, I said in my haste, is still in the forgiving business. To those who will be willing to say, hastily, I said, in my haste. I said, in my haste. Would you bow your heads for prayer, please? Well, what is it? What is it? What did you say in your haste? What is that picture that comes in your mind tonight? What are those words that you see before your eyes mentally right now? I said in my haste. Something about a fellow student. Something about a class member. Something about a teacher. Something about a church member. Something about a neighbor. Something about a staff member. Something about a deacon. Something about a neighbor, a friend. What did you say in your haste? I wonder how many would say tonight, Brother Hiles, I'll have to say with David, I said in my haste. I said in my haste, I'll have to say with David those words. For I said something I wish we had not have said. I said something I shouldn't have said. I stand as guilty as David did. Pray for me. Would you lift your hand, please, all over this great Colosseum, all over the building? Raise your hand. Keep them up. Who else? All over the building. God bless you. Father, bless us, all of us. Oh, these tongues of ours are like a wild beast that cannot be tamed, like the deadly serpent that must stay in a box, and like the deadly poison that must be bottled and sealed, like the deadly tiger or lion that roars in the cage and wants to get out and hurt people and cause people trouble. Oh, forgive us for our hasty talking, and forgive us for what we've said and the quickness with which we've said it. God, forgive me and all of these my people because of something we said in our haste. We said in our haste. Our heads are bowed. Our eyes are closed. We have no steps here. We have no carpet. We have no mourner's bench or no altar. All we have is some hardwood floor on either side of this pulpit. Maybe that's best. Maybe we ought to kneel and be uncomfortable instead of having it so luxurious. God's people in the Bible knelt in sackcloth and ashes. Maybe we ought to kneel on hardwood. But wherever you are in this building tonight, if there's something that you feel you ought to say to God at an altar, then we'll just transfer this basketball court beside where I'm standing to an altar. If you want to come and kneel and pray on either side, there's room for several hundred people. You do it. But wait a minute. I wonder who's here tonight. And you'd say, Brother Hiles, I don't even know that I'm saved. I don't even know that if I died tonight, I'd go to heaven. First on the main floor. Who would say, pray for me, I'm not saved, or don't know that I am? Lift your hand and I'll pray for you. Quickly on the main floor. Quickly on the main floor. God bless you, young man. I see you. God bless you. And God bless that child. God bless you. Right where you are, wouldn't you say, dear God, I come to Jesus now. I know I'm a sinner and I know no sinners are lost. I know that Jesus died for sinners and I come to Jesus now. And then when we sing in a few minutes, I want you to leave your seat and come down the aisle. Who else would say, include me in the prayer? On the main floor. I don't know that I'm saved, but I wish I did. The balcony on my left. Raise it way high so I can see it. If you don't know that you're saved, raise your hand and I'll pray for you. The balcony on my right. Balcony on my right. If you don't know that you're saved, you'd say, pray for me. I want to be saved and know it. God bless you. Who else? Who else?